Institute for Child Health Policy at the University of Florida. I am actually an economist, a health economist, and this group of people that you see on the slide that I collaborate with are either clinicians, economists, or health services researchers as well. So this is a project that we began based on one of the contracts and grants we work off of. Florida is the first state in the nation to have a pediatric palliative care program that is subsidized by the government. That started in 2005. And so this is some of the first research that we did to get ready for that program to start, which really prompted us to start looking at end-of-life cost and utilization. Since that program started in 2005, we now have about 400 children in the program, which doesn't seem like a lot, but there are countries that only have 30 children in programs like that. So it's actually a pretty huge program, comparatively speaking. So again, this is the first part of our research related to palliative care for children. Just a little bit of background. Some of you know these statistics that about 50,000 children die every year, and they die from a variety of things. Most predominantly is injuries. And the older you get, you see more homicides and suicides and that types of things. But in addition, what we don't hear about is 500,000 children a year that are living with and coping with life-limiting illnesses. The definition of that can be debated. Some people will, you know, have very distinct views of what life-limiting is. What we have put forth in this paper and in our program is that children are at risk of dying before they're age 21, and they typically have specific diagnoses like HIV and leukemia and cancer and that type of thing. And again, the goal of palliative care is not only to provide medical care for these children, but to also provide, integrate that with spirituality, counseling, emotional, massage, pain control, that type of thing. And so the idea is, if you were going to try to create some kind of end-of-life program or some kind that either integrates palliative care or doesn't, you really need to understand what's going on in the first place at the end of life with these kids and what kind of services they're using. So what would you do? Well, you'd do a literature review and you would basically find nothing. There's a couple papers out there. Chris Fudner, who's at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, has done the bulk of work in this area, has published in JAMA, et cetera, on location of death and uses of hospitalization at the end of life, and that's really the only thing there is. So the goals of our study, we wanted to go beyond talking about hospitalizations, and we wanted to look at the full catchment of services, or the full basket of services that these kids would use at the end of life, inpatient, outpatient, et cetera. Why do we want to do that? Because again, if you are a state or if you are an HMO and you're thinking about creating programs for kids at the end of life, more choices, again, you need to figure out what's going on. You know, from the economist standpoint, we always focus on that emergency department and inpatient costs, and we say, can we substitute those things out for lower cost home-based services, which really is, you know, morally and ethically is not the reason why you do palliative care, but really is the argument behind starting palliative care type programs. So this paper, again, focuses on the last 12 months of life, but we try to look at a broader list of categories of expenditures. And again, we run some regressions, and we also look at demographic characteristics, cause of death, and how those things affect spending as well, so that you could target programs. I should say, this was brought up when we first turned in the paper, yeah, this is really nice, and you're going to talk to us about hospice as one of your cost categories, but how does that relate to the rest of the country? And so I have to be forthcoming and tell you that hospice is very available in the state of Florida, and you would think to yourself, well, you know, you have that population, that demographic that is older, and that's true. We have more hospice inpatient days than any other state, but we also have the largest proportion of hospices that are willing to take on children in their program. Now, you have to stop for a minute and think, okay, well, this is under the Medicare reimbursement rule, which means you can't reimburse for hospice until you're at the last 6 months of life, which applies to children as well as adults. So this, if you're a hospice and you're willing to accept children into your hospice, they are at end of life. And I'll talk a little bit about and how that deviates from palliative care. I do have to mention, though, that there are other agencies besides hospices that might be providing services to children at the end of life. Suppose you have a hospital like at Vanderbilt where they have a palliative care program in the hospital, and I don't have any way of capturing that. And one of the reasons why we don't is there's no code for palliative care in the Medicaid claims and expenditures. And so we're trying to sort of get at what's out there, what's available, but I can't tell you what's going on palliative care-wise because there just are no codes. And that's part of our program is that we have developed codes to capture that in the future. What is the sample that we looked at? We have about 700 infants and 1,500 children. These died in that time period. They were all enrolled in Florida's Medicaid program, and that represents about one-third of all the deaths, child deaths in Florida. Births, about one-third of all births are Medicaid births anyway, so we think this is pretty representative of what's going on. 60% in our sample are males. We think that that's due to the fact that boys tend to be more accident-prone than girls. We have more black infants. You would expect that. As you all know, the mortality rates for minorities are higher than their white counterparts. Less than 10% live in a rural area. Infants on average, we separate that. The way that we're defining infants are a year old or less, and on average they're 3 months old. Children are between 1 year and 21, and on average in our sample they're 12 years old, and the average number of months that the children are in Medicaid is 9. For infants, it is the exact same as their age, so 3 months. I'm not going to go through this, every line on this, every cell on this table, but here we just looked at mean expenditures during the last year of life for those who incurred expenditures, period. So it wouldn't make sense for me to include everybody who didn't have expenditures, because then you'd have these really strange averages. But if you just look, the infants is on the left, the children is on the right. As you would expect, the highest numbers are inpatient, especially for infants. You can imagine a lot of these babies don't even go home from the hospital. They die in the hospital. But what's interesting is if you look at the hospice row, infants on average used about $8,600 in hospice, and children about $11,000. So they are using, even though they're small percentages, 4% and 11% respectively, they are using quite a bit hospice expenditures. Total costs are about the same. Cause of death. One of the things that we originally had in this paper was we separated out these children by severity of illness, and the reviewers came back and said, nah, that really doesn't make sense. We want to know why these children died. So I had to go back and match the claims data to death certificate data, which, as you all know, you can make an argument that may or may not be the greatest, you know, way of finding out the underlying cause of death, but nonetheless, the state of Florida and the Office of Vital Statistics gave us this data, and they actually partition out the cause of death into a myriad of categories, and we're able to funnel them down into four major ones, and you can see those up there, perinatal, chronic, external, and other. External would be you drowned, you got in a car accident, etc. Other really SIDS is the big mover in this category, and then you have quite a few children who they just don't know why. Natural death, natural causes of death, or unexplained causes of death. Maybe they had some odd labs, but they couldn't definitively say why they passed away. More infants died from a chronic condition, and more children died from external causes. Well, how does that compare to the national statistics? Well, for children, it's right on par, because, again, as I said earlier, most children die from things like accidents and homicides, etc. But for infants, it is a little... it's a little interesting that in our sample, more infants died from chronic conditions. You would assume that it would be more perinatal causes. But again, this is a Medicaid population. They tend to be sicker than outside of Medicaid. So what did we do? We did this two-part strategy. As you all know, you look at what's the odds of incurring any expenditures in part one, and then you, in your second part of your model, you say given that someone spent, then we want to predict expenditures. Outcomes variables, again, we looked at expenditures in each of those categories, inpatient, outpatient, hospice, et cetera. We also log transformed the expenditures because of the fact that you got tons of zeros. That's pretty common. And predictor variables, I've already mentioned some of the things that we talked about, cause of death, months enrolled, demographics, et cetera. So what do we find? In part one of the model, again, we're looking at what are the odds of incurring any expenditures at all. You can imagine that cause of death really had the greatest impact in that if you're an infant and you had a perinatal or a chronic cause of death, that increased your odds. And I always say this wrong because it's logged odds, but increased your logged odds of incurring expenditures as opposed to those in that other category, which again was SIDS or unexplained death, by 80%. The longer that you're enrolled in Medicaid, your expenditures go up about 20% for hospice, which makes sense because you have more of an opportunity, 60% for pharmacy. Black infants had decreased odds versus whites, less outpatient, and less in the other category. And I should have explained a little bit what other means in terms of cost. I talked about what other meant in terms of cause of death, but other in terms of cost are things like DME, PT, OT, some home health, et cetera. No, home health is not in there, I apologize. But some DME, PT, OT. So what's interesting, and I'll talk a little bit about this at the end, is that really looks at, you know, is it a case, you should ask yourself, well, is it the case that those minority infants really needed it less or have access to it less, et cetera. And we've heard some of those questions before we look at disparities in other areas. But I don't think that this point has been raised at end of life. The last point really was the most bizarre. Hispanic infants had 5 times the odds of incurring hospice expenditures versus whites. And I have run this data in lots of different ways. I've taken different cut points and different strata, and I find the same result every time. And I'll talk a little bit about that at the end. I need to go through quickly. In children, basically, we find very similar results. Again, children are defined as a year old to 21. The longer you're enrolled has the greatest effect on your odds of incurring expenditures. Again, black children had increased odds here for emergency room, and you've heard some of that before in the literature about using minorities using more emergency department use than inpatient use or preventive care. So then when we look at the second part of the model, again, cause of death has the greatest effect on inpatient expenditures for infants. We talked a little bit about the fact that perinatal and chronic. Months enrolled increased expenditures by between 11 and 33% depending on the service type. Similarly for children, a lot of the logistic conclusions carry over to the second part of the model. Months enrolled increased expenditures. Blacks and Hispanics here had higher inpatient expenditures. Rural children had lower outpatient and pharmacy expenditures. So just some points for discussion. Again, it's interesting that infants and children had basically very similar total costs when you look at the average amount, but as we would expect, infants spent more on inpatient dollars. Children spend more on hospice. I'm not sure that you should expect that other than the fact that children are living longer, maybe they have more of an opportunity, but really that says to us and to policymakers that there's a really good opportunity to get infants involved in palliative care programs, even if it's within a hospital. There are lots of opportunities there that are not being taken advantage of. And just the fact that it was 4% and 11% of the sample even incurred those expenditures should tell you that there's lots of opportunities that we're not taking advantage of. I'm not going to go through this, but just to point out the expected and unexpected results. Again, the most striking result we found was that bullet that Hispanic infants were about 5 times more likely than white infants to use hospice services. And I've looked everywhere in the literature and through several texts to try and come up with some understanding of that. And the only thing I found was an article by Adams in 2005 where they said, if you have a hospice that is located within a Hispanic community, that they're more willing to use those services. And maybe it is in Florida. As you all know, we have large Hispanic communities in Miami and Tampa and those types of places. And maybe it is that as a community, it's an accepted service provider. Limitations. Obviously, I'm only looking at Medicaid data here. You know, I don't know what the story is going to be. If you tell me, well, what happens in the private sector, I don't know. And obviously, different insurance companies may or may not cover different options at the end of life. If I looked at more than 1 year of data, because this is all costs in the last 12 months of life, would the story be any different? I don't know. And this is the last point to make, is again, what we tried to do with this paper is just describe a landscape so that this information could be used, again, by states and organizations if they wanted to look at, number one, what are the choices being offered at the end of life, and number two, what if we wanted to do a palliative care program. But as some of you all know, the push for palliative care in this country is not at end of life anymore. It is going beyond that. The push for palliative care now stands at the point of diagnosis on. And so although as Medicaid and Medicare we have traditionally reimbursed in the last 6 months of life, there is a push at the national level, and definitely at the state level, to expand reimbursement so that you can be reimbursed for services from the point of diagnosis on. You may or may not see some of that in the coming months. I know that there's some legislation being discussed at the federal level of whether the Medicaid rules can be changed. Implications. Infants and children die from different causes. I think that's pretty obvious. But they also have different service needs. So if you wanted to come up with these programs and packages, you really have to cater that. You can't, it's just not one size fits all. And a lot of the infant programs should really be focused on what's available in the hospital, and then discharge from the hospital, what can you provide. Some of these babies do get to go home. And palliative care in terms of respite and counseling can be provided in home. Race and ethnicity is definitely important. But how it affects use of services, we don't know. Again, I told you that story about the paper that I found about Hispanics, but, you know, there may be some cultural things going on as well. Future research, number one, how can we use this information to develop end-of-life care programs? How can we explain choices? How can we explain to policymakers that, look, it is really in your best interest to think about getting these children out of the inpatient setting and getting them at home, not only in terms of cost, but in terms of quality of life? Those are all things that work better if you're the policymaker, if they have numbers behind them, and you can really show that they're effective. And what drives the differences in service usage by age?